I'm interesting in the sense of I'm trying to not let it completely define me, because you can go down rabbit holes about what could happen in 10, 20 years time, you know, if you're not careful enough, and it can be a very scary place to go. So I think I'm mindful enough to take it seriously and to not ignore it, because if you ignore it, then of course, then that also has its ramifications. I did not do anything to cause this. Ultimately, in most cases with autoimmune diseases, there is a very strong genetic element to it. And there's like genes which we have directly tied to what the downstream manifestation would be. But there's also, I think, like easily over 100 potential genes that we've identified, but we don't even know what they quite do. But we know that they are a risk for IBD.
This is Yasmin, who got diagnosed with Crohn's at age 31 in Los Angeles, California. Yasmin brings a unique perspective to inflammatory bowel disease. She's a sharp-minded immunologist who sees the autoimmune terrain from both sides of the microscope. Today, she's telling us all about her Crohn's journey, and together, we'll take a deep dive into all things biologics and autoimmunity. This is Talkin' Shit, presented by Colitis Unfiltered. My name is Frank Tabring, and Yasmin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Crohn's disease, that's your diagnosis, fairly recent. Let's go back to the beginning. Could you talk a little bit about your first symptoms and whatever you experienced that prompted you to take action and seek a physician to find out what's going on?
Yeah, so I've always actually struggled with some sort of stomach-related issue all my life. I was always sort of susceptible to mainly upper GI. So that will be like a lot of nausea, vomiting, anytime I was actually stressed out, really. So that's something, even as a child, I had that going on. And it was just kind of like the thing that like my parents and family knew about me. But I think what really sparked the need to warrant further investigation was when I moved to the US. So I relocated to Los Angeles and California in just beginning of 2022. So I noticed very quickly that my stomach wasn't able to like tolerate foods that I typically would have been able to tolerate in London. And I was just running to the toilet, running to the loo, as we like to say as a Brit, running to the loo like constantly. I think it was the urgency that was quite a horrible situation. It was sort of that the moment you had to go, you have a 5-minute window to get to the loo. So that was something that I noticed, that this is not normal, and it was happening on a daily basis. That was just as I moved here. And I think what was interesting, I noticed, and obviously there is data to sort of support at this point, but I actually ended up getting COVID in August 2022. So yeah, it was, you know, when I was living here for about 7-8 months at this point, and it wrecked my GI. Like no other symptoms but my GI. And that's not completely uncommon, especially as the more understanding about how the virus works. And I really did not recover from that point. And so everything just sort of got more exacerbated. And to be honest, I actually knew I had, just with my background and my sort of field of expertise, I knew I had Crohn's. I knew. I just needed the confirmation, really, to be able to proceed medically.
So you just mentioned, you know, when you were suffering from COVID, your GI was wrecked, and this podcast is called Talking Shit for a Reason. What specifically, are we talking about diarrhea constantly, cramps, blood? Like, how did that manifest?
Yeah, so for me, it was, I mean, diarrhea, but also vomiting. Like, it was just out of nowhere. It was brutal on both ends, almost like I had like norovirus or something. And it was constant to the point I was like, oh my goodness, like I need to get some desperate electrolytes in me. So I dropped nearly a stone in that time of having COVID. Stone is, how do we say this? It's like 15 pounds, I think. So 7 kg, right?
I was going to ask you to clarify. Yeah, thank you.
So any of the Americans, European, I think it's 15, 7 kg, right? So which is a lot of weight. And yes, yeah, so very loose. But then what actually prompted me to get the investigation was, so that was in August 2022. And then I continued suffering per se for another year of just loose, diarrhea constantly. It was very difficult. I now was navigating a brand new relationship. And let me tell you, that is trying to run around in secret is when you're trying to impress someone is not ideal at all. But we worked through that. And but then it was the night before my 31st birthday party. I actually ended up in the ER because I was passing blood. And there was no obvious symptoms, but I wasn't like pushing, you know, it wasn't like from straining. It was just dropping in the bowl, and I thought, this isn't good. So we ended up in the ER and they said, yeah, you need to follow up with a GI. As I said, by that point, I knew, to be honest.
Medically, you knew about Crohn's disease. You knew what it was. Most people, when they're diagnosed with IBD, are not familiar with either Crohn's or colitis. So while it was not a surprise to you medically, you're still human. So I'd like to know what went through your mind mentally, emotionally, when you heard the words officially, you have Crohn's disease.
Yeah. So, I mean, my GI did not like wait at all. I was like still coming out of my sedation when he told me, and I was like, oh, like on a kind of different planet. So I don't think I fully processed it, but I'm actually very ashamed to say the very first response was relief that I had validation for making a fuss of my symptoms. And it very quickly switched to, okay, wait, no, let's think about that further. Because, you know, you never want to be seen as being an unnecessary drama queen and needing extra accommodations. Like, it was always so embarrassing to have to list off dietary restrictions or just things that were, I noticed were triggering me, but maybe not, but maybe. And, you know, having to, as I say, have constant access to the bathroom. It was nice initially, like for the first 30 seconds, the knee-jerk reaction is relief that, oh, there's actually a valid reason. Like, I'm not just making a fuss out of nowhere. But then, of course, it went into, oh, okay, right, there's something going on. And, you know, my life might not look the same moving forward from this point on.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about this change in life in a few minutes. Before we get there, I want to just talk a little bit about what treatments you are currently undergoing and what is your experience with these medications.
I actually wasn't on treatment for the first year. We were just trying to just kind of see how it was going to go, but I was put on budesonide. So, I mean, that counts as a treatment. A budesonide is a steroid, and it sort of blasts your immune system, essentially. It's like a quick sort of, let's try and calm this flare down. It like is a, we call it like a, almost like a pan immunosuppressant. It just like in general, just like stops the immune system from freaking out. But I will say the one I had was more like classified as like almost gut specific budesonide. And it was really intense on me. Very, very intense. It actually, for my case, did not make it better. It seemed to have made everything much worse. And perhaps this isn't completely surprising. I don't want anyone that's listening to like get freaked out if they are offered budesonide, because, you know, it's part of the standard care. Like, it does work. I think for my situation, there's a lot going on with the immune system that, or, you know, if you try and suppress it, sometimes it comes back in full force to do the opposite, you know. And when you're twiddling with immunosuppressants, you know, sometimes it doesn't follow completely the predictable trend. I mean, it was better than not doing anything at all, though. So I was put on budesonide, did not help the situation at all. I did change up my diet drastically as well. I was just a lot more, I wasn't doing anything bad before, but I think I was just a lot more accountable, you know, to like maybe not having an extra glass of wine on the weekend or an extra, you know, cocktail or two, or not having pizza or something. I was being a lot more accountable, but ultimately we knew that I had to start something to really keep everything under control, just from a quality of life, but also the risk of potential serious consequences later on down the line. So I started a biologic. It's a relatively newer, I would say, class of biologics. It's called Entyvio. That's the name that I'm on. It's a type of for those, you know, nerds, immunology nerds out there, it's a type of anti-integrin agent. It's called vedolizumab. So people might know it from its antibody name. But I've been on it since March of this year, and it has definitely been a game changer. Absolute game changer. No regrets. Only regret is I didn't start sooner, to be honest.
You've been on that since March this year, you said. How are you feeling today? What is life like currently?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I got my quality of life back. I'm not running to the toilet like every second of the day or having to like have access to a toilet like nearby. And also, like, real talk, like, I want a nice bathroom. Okay, if, you know, I'm going to put my bum on that seat 5 times a day. I don't want like a gas station bathroom. It's too anxiety driving. So I would be obviously me and my now husband at the time, my partner, we're just like, is there a nice hotel nearby? I just need a hotel that's nearby so I could use their lobby restroom. It's so nice to not have to worry about that anymore. It's nice to be able to go for a nice meal and not have to scout the menu hours before and properly interrogate every single meal and to make sure that I can have this, 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 this. Or if we're going to friends' houses and they're hosting us, not having to be that guest that's, you know, listing off a bunch of dietary restrictions when they're just ultimately being polite and they just don't want to kill you, you know, with like a severe nut allergy. So I think it's better to have my life back in that sense. So I am tolerant of, it seems like, pretty much every food that was aggravating for me before. You know, don't have that urgency anymore, no more diarrhea, the stools are formed, which is nice. That was new for me as well.
Fantastic.
Yes, exactly. So, but then I will say we haven't gone in with any of like the biomarkers yet. We've not done any of like the testing just to make sure that it's working. So, I mean, I know symptomatically it is, but I think my next visit, we're going to go and we're going to do some tests just to confirm that everything is working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned that you've done some changes to your lifestyle in relation to paying attention more to diet, but how else has Crohn's impacted you in terms of life, in terms of how you navigate life? Any other lifestyle changes that you found useful that work for you in dealing with Crohn's?
So this might be another controversial one to some people that are in the tribe, I would say, but I was like a big CrossFitter, so I loved CrossFit, and you know, that was my jam. I got into it like in 2019, I think 2018, and once you're in the tribe, you're in the tribe. I'm not gonna call it cult because, you know, we'll get yelled at. I'll get yelled at. But once you're in the tribe, you're in the tribe. And I loved it. I love the weightlifting aspect. I love the high intensity. But what I found interesting was as my symptoms developed, like progressed, I noticed very visibly I was not able to keep up with the workouts. I was not able to recover. You know, my mates were able to do it like every day, at least three days in a row, 1 day off, 4 days in a row, 1 day off. At one point when I was in the UK, I was able to do that. When I started doing CrossFit out here, I did one workout and I was fried for like 2-3 days. And I noticed like, yeah, I was not able to recover. I was not able to keep up. And it didn't make sense because I was obviously pushing more weight. I was improving some of like my stats, but then I realized, there's a whole other conversation we can have about this because there's actual definite like links with the immune system. And if you go too hard exercise wise and the potential effects. But so I ended up completely stripping back. So I haven't picked up a barbell in a long time. I'm now a Pilates girl, very Los Angeles. I go to my Pilates with my Stanley Cup. And I mean, it's actually been very beneficial for me to step back like that. So having to strip back those workouts, I would say.
I'm no longer in LA, but I got my Stanley Cup right here. And it's sort of like a lifesaver in terms of, well, there you go. You got the pink one? Is that the one that I saw? Like, no, it's the white one?
I've got the okay. Cream one. Yeah, it's
really exactly. That's a good one. You mentioned something. You mentioned something that sparked my sort of curiosity. You said, you know, if you go too hard with exercising, that sort of can have a negative impact. Could you elaborate on this a little bit? Because a lot of people, they just like exercise all the time, you know, push your body. But What's the deal here?
There's a lot of there's a lot of hardcore immunology in this, but sort of like kind of like Goldilocks theory in that sense of like too little and too far. You know, you need to find that balance of just right. And there is, okay, so I'm going to say exercise does wonders for the body, make like it's an anti-cancer. We can also classify it, you know, exercise is being explored alongside standard of care for cancer patients to be able to boost their immune systems to fight cancer. I mean, that's like in the cancer field. And even in general for like immunoregulation, which is this whole topic of autoimmunity, is something's gone wrong with regulating the immune system or immunoregulation. In general, exercise does wonders for like our actual like muscles and our like tissues and boosting the anti-inflammatory cells versus the, you know, cells that cause inflammation, the pro-inflammatory cells. But with all that, but you know, you can go too far and swing the other way. And it is a balance, right? If you are wrecking your body every single day and building up those stress levels in your body as well, your immune system is driven by stress. You know, your immune cells have hormone receptors, you know, and that's good, but it's also bad in terms of how they move around your body. And if you're not giving your body adequate time to recover, that obviously doesn't just have ramifications on your actual like tissues, but also on your immune system as well. So that's kind of keeping it very high level, but that's why it's very important to listen to your body and to not get caught up in the hype. Especially I found, you know, at least for me with CrossFit, if I didn't keep up with my classmates, I would get like stressed out. And I think like class environments are great, by the way. It motivates me, but that's something you can definitely tell. Like you feel the pressure if you don't, especially if it's like a time cap and you don't finish the workout in the time, you're last in the class to finish. And it might make you want to go harder, but then you're thinking, hang on, what's the impact on my body? You know, it's not just not being hard enough or badass enough, you know. So, yeah.
Okay, let's close that parenthesis and we're going to come back to all this autoimmune and immunology stuff very, very shortly. But yes, you got diagnosed recently, but that does not mean that you haven't had your experiences with this disease. So between your diagnosis and today, how do you feel that Crohn's disease has changed you as a person in general?
So I'm interesting in the sense of I'm trying to not let it completely define me, because you can go down rabbit holes about what could happen in 10, 20 years time, you know, if you're not careful enough, and it can be a very scary place to go. So I think I'm mindful enough to take it seriously and to not ignore it, because if you ignore it, then of course, then that also has its ramifications, but also to not get completely sucked into like overanalyzing every single symptom. If I have an off day or if I have a meal that's thrown me off slightly, like I did have food poisoning like 2 months ago and I thought my life was over. It's like, this is it. This is how it ends. It's just an experience. But I think it has definitely one massive benefit is it's allowed me to be kinder to myself, especially when it comes to fitness, like gym related aspects, and just thinking, am I not resilient enough? I'm not in the 5 a.m. club, you know, I'm not surviving on 4 hours sleep. No, sleep is necessary for your immune system, like, you know, which is the priority at this point. You know, I think it's being kinder to myself and also listening to my body, not getting sucked up by the hustle culture around me, because they're not suffering from my symptoms. And even if they are, then, you know, they're doing a good job of keeping it quiet. So I think that's been the biggest, I think it's been me being kinder to myself, but also knowing, and that's a big lesson for everybody, I did not do anything to cause this. Ultimately, in most cases with autoimmune diseases, there is a very strong genetic element to it. And there's like genes which we have directly tied to what the downstream manifestation would be, but there's also, I think, like over 100 potential genes that we've identified, but we don't even know what they quite do, but we know that they are a risk for IBD. So I think it's also being kind to myself and knowing that I didn't cause this isn't my fault, and just being at peace with that, really.
Mm-hmm. I was actually going to touch on that subject, and I got to make sure I don't forget about all the other questions I want to ask you as a follow-up here. But sometimes I have people who literally told me in the past, you're an anxious person, you have this situation that's stressful for you, you have those family issues over there, this is what causes your autoimmune disease. What do you respond to such a statement?
So it is difficult because there are definitely interesting links for sure between sort of stress, as I say, stress and the immune system and even like that gut barrier and it's like quote unquote leakiness. I don't like that phrase because it gets tooted around so much now by everybody thinks they got that leaky gut. But, you know, really that leaky gut comes from like IBD, essentially. You know, that barrier, that integrity becomes a lot more, you know, leaky per se. So I definitely think there is definitely some science to it. And we do know that the neuroimmunoendo axis, so like the brain, the immune system, and all the hormones, everything is linked. And, you know, I mean, I could go on for this for days, but when you're thinking about your diagnosis or your like disease, you have to think about it holistically. Like, don't just be like, oh, maybe one incident could have been the final trigger, but you know, your body is, you know, your entire being is not just going to be responsive to like one specific trigger. It's, as I say, it's your cardiovascular system, it's your nervous system, it's your hormone system, it's your immune system. You've got all these different elements. So with that, you know that, of course, stress does also feed to your gut. And, you know, it does mobilize the immune cells as well in the gut. And there's really interesting like studies coming out about even depression and its links to the gut. And again, that's not surprising at all. Like, we know that, you know, everything is linked in this way, or synced, I should say. But I think to go as so far as to extrapolate and say that is why you have Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, because you had a breakdown over that breakup that you had. Let's not go that far. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's linked, but you know, there's a strong genetic part that is in play here as well. And I don't want to say we use genetics as an excuse, but yeah, this is something where most of the time, it's not, like you said, it's not our fault, right? Like, we are given the genes that we're given. You know, we cannot pick and choose. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's that balance. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Now, in your previous response, you talked about fear. You talked about, you know, fear down the road. You know, is this disease coming back with a vengeance? Am I going to flare up potentially? And I got to say, I'm the first one who's guilty with this. I mean, just about 2 months ago, I had a calprotectin. It was 150 or so. It was the first time that it was, well, slightly elevated in years, because I've had the chance to be in remission for the better part of 10 years. And so, of course, I'm like, you know, messaging my doctor, hey, should we do a colonoscopy? Should we do more testing? She says, I'm not really worried. We were supposed to do colonoscopy next year anyway, but hey, if it calms you down, sure, why don't we just do it now? It doesn't really matter. So what is your message to people, well, like me and others, that might have a little bit of an elevated fear, especially if also they're in remission, about this next symptom or anything that could potentially remind oneself to flare, but that might not actually be what's happening?
It's interesting you say this, because I've kind of been in the similar situation. So I'm trying to think about how I would advise myself. One time my calprotectin was over 1400. And there's a whole crazy story about that as well, which I really want to be careful because I don't want to spread misinformation either. But it ties into my story. That's why I switched to a Stanley cup. I had another water bottle. I'm not going to say the name because I'm not the brand, because I'm not going to be, I don't want to be dealing with that. But I was gross and I clearly didn't clean it properly. And within the rubber, it had a rubber ring, you know, the rubber ring inside. And we took it like out where there was like clearly mold in it, you know? And we actually, with me being at the job that I have, we have a microbiology lab. Like, the head of microbiology sat in the office next to mine. So I just went over and I was like, hey, can we just plate this and can we culture it? And I mean, anything grows when you put it on like an agar plate, but this was like noticeable in the conditions. Immediately there was some sort of growth, and we didn't send it off for IDing, but anyways, so I'm not gonna like get people to freak out over mold, because there's so much misinformation about mold and mold testing and all of that. But when I switched water bottles, my calprotectin it aggressively dropped from 1430 down to like around less than 100. It was a crazy situation, but anyways, so also like, yeah, you just don't know. I mean, situations like that can like trigger, but I'm gonna be careful because calprotectin is also very much a biomarker for IBD. I think so. I'm not a clinician, so clinicians might argue with me on this. I just know from my experience, like that one, and even just knowing about blood work, it really is just a snapshot in the moment of time, right? It's the snapshot of what happened, the day before, or the day before that. So that's why I think while there are some biomarkers that you definitely need to act on immediately, there are others where you have to look, as I say, look at the whole picture. You've got to look holistically. How is everything else? How are you behaving symptomatically? How are your stools at the moment? Are you passing blood? How are your other biomarkers? How's your like general inflammatory markers in your body? So I would say when you freak out, like look at the whole picture. I will also caveat when I say that, because I know symptoms doesn't always paint the full picture. You have some cases, of course, where people are asymptomatic and then don't even know, and they have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, which is just crazy as well. That's also very scary. Yeah, so I don't know what my advice would be. Don't over freak out and partner with a good GI physician, probably.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's sort of what kept me in check as well, to have someone that tells me in her reply, I am not worried.
Yes.
And interestingly enough, our relationship is so strong that I worried less. I was able to calm down. I got to be honest with you, scheduling a colonoscopy also gave me the peace of mind. It's coming up in a couple of weeks, but still, reading that and this coming from somebody who's really proactive, who really knows their stuff in this field, it does provide some sense of relief for sure. You kind of spoiled it already, where let's say for anybody listening, it's no longer a secret that you're not just anyone who's interested in science, IBD. You are actually a scientist, and yes, you are very well versed in immunology. So I would love to talk a little bit about this, because for so many IBD patients, Crohn's or colitis, this top tier of medications, the biologics, is sort of like lifeline drugs, right? Like, this is what keeps them in remission. Lots of us stick with one treatment for a long time. Others, even like myself, we sort of develop antibodies and then we have to switch to the next biologic. There's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of misconceptions out there.
Yeah.
But going back to the basics, especially for those who have been recently diagnosed or who know people, care for people who are diagnosed recently, could you very quickly take us through an easy enough to understand to the average human being definition of a biologic, especially in context also of IBD?
Yes. So I think with the IBD specific drugs, when I think of the biologics, I think of those like immunomodulators. We obviously call them, so those that, change up the immune system. That's exactly, what it stands for. I guess it's not really change up, just sort of like, tips the balance, let's say. So the classic biologics, you've mentioned, Remicade, that's a perfect example. That's an anti-TNF agent. So a lot of options for like the newer class for IBD patients, I mean, not even newer class, some of these have been around for like 20 years or so, is they target cytokines. So what a cytokine is it's basically how your immune cells communicate to each other, like the signals that they use. The language they use is cytokines. And that can even be like non-immune cells speaking directly to immune cells. Like, for example, like your gut barrier speaking to your immune cells. So cytokines is the language that they use. But they also, it's not even just the language in the sense of just like telling this cell to go over here. It also is telling the cell to become this or do this role. Now, when you think about the ones for IBD, like anti-TNF, so infliximab or like Remicade, or anti-IL-12, which is like Stelara, and Skyrizi is anti-IL-23, for example, that like blocks the IL-23 cytokine. So the cytokines can be like either have like the TNF names or the ILs. So that sounds for interleukin, like IL-12, IL-23. So those are all different like cytokines or signals that bring about different responses, like depending on what cell releases, what cell catches it. I mean, specific cells respond to specific cytokines. That is going to cause the response. Now, IL-12, IL-23, TNF, in this case, TNF-alpha mainly, there's also TNF-beta. Anyways, they're all very important in your immune system because if you have infection, they all kick in and they obviously cause, they mold the immune system to be able to fight the infection or, you know, or like tell other T cells to turn into this type of T cell or to become this kind of like more differentiated, specialized immune cell to go clear this infection. That's great. But when you have IBD and other specific autoimmune diseases, which obviously this is tied to, it also can be the wrong kind. It can be inflammation against you. So not just against clearing infections, but also, unfortunately, fighting your own body. So we need to tamper that. We need to calm that down. So that is obviously when these biologics come in. So obviously, as you said, you were, I think, on, you said, like an anti-TNF agent.
Yeah, Remicade, yeah. And then later Humira, Simponi. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So obviously that was doing that response, that was basically calming down the TNF. Now, obviously, the next question that we get typically is, oh, but that sounds like very important for your immune system. Are you going to be at risk by stopping that particular cytokine or that signal? Now, this was always a big fear, like amongst the scientific community. And I mean, it's an understandable fear because yes, I mean, you know, think about it like on paper, that's how all that works. But there is now tons of data and studies to support like the long-term safety of these agents, especially with like the newer class coming out already, like the IL-12s, the IL-23s, and just how you know, your safety long-term down the line versus, of course, you hear like immunocompromised, like, oh, my immune system's compromised. But also, those are just one or two or three cytokines out of, you have so many different arms of your immune system at work that, you know, if you knock out, or like not even knock out, it's not the right term, sorry, but if you quiet or silence this particular signal, your rest of your immune system can still do its thing. You know, people are on like B cell depleters, like, you know, rituximab, like proper, like really going after all their B cells or like most of their B cells, and they're still mostly fine. Now, I want to also be careful when I say that, because there are always caveats, because of course, yes, you are immunocompromised. Please take safety precautions, you know, be safe. If something's going around, don't make dumb decisions that are going to put your health at risk. But the biggest lesson I want people to take away is that any potential risk of being immunocompromised or silencing this part of your immune system does not come close to letting this or an autoimmune disease run rampant in your body. That risk is far greater.
That's really a strong statement, and I think everybody should think about that. Now, what response do you have to people, potentially even certain doctors, who would tell you that being on biologics, especially for decades on end, is hurting the body, is hurting your health long term? Sometimes they don't even mean this in a bad way. I had my own partner ask me sometimes, hey, but is it okay for your body to be on these biologics for the rest of your life, right? What's your response here?
So as they say, you know, we are accruing data as time goes on, looking at long-term studies. Now, we don't have a 100-year-old study, you know, to look at someone who's been on it for 100 years, you know. But we have data definitely to support longitudinally that it's safe. And again, but my big question I would ask those people is, what's the bigger risk of not being on it? You know, the immune system is directly, and we know the immune system's good, right? It keeps you alive every day, and you're exposed to, you know, so many potential pathogenic agents every single day, but it keeps you alive. So it's powerful. What happens when it directs that powerful response against your own organs? What happens if you just let that do what it wants, unrestricted, uncontrolled? That risk is far greater. And, you know, every potential medical intervention, every medical intervention or treatment regimen carries some sort of risk. Always. For goodness sake, I'm not going to make it about this, but even taking Tylenol or paracetamol, let's not. Just to be clear, it doesn't cause autism, but get that out there. But even just taking that, you know, like anything carries a risk. But what is the risk of not taking that intervention, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I would always
pose. Yeah, absolutely. Even biologics have come a long way. I remember back in 2013, and again, that's really not that long ago, but one of my fears, especially the first 5 to 6, 7 years when I would develop antibodies against the treatment, I have to switch to the next one. One of my fears was, what if I run out of options? Now, fast forward to 2025, I sometimes even talk to the nurses at my infusion center, and they're telling me, oh my God, we have a new biologic hitting the market basically, you know, once a year, maybe even more. How do you evaluate sort of the current biologics market, and what would your message be to the people that are afraid of just burning through treatments and then ending up at a point where, well, I used all of them, now what?
Yeah, exactly what you said, and the pace that science is being revolutionized right now, we are moving at such a fast pace. So, I mean, for example, my career, I'm in the cell and gene therapy space, and cell therapy and gene therapy is just exploding right now. And in general, this whole biologics, they are all like classified as, we can classify as immunotherapy. I mean, people have different thoughts, but in general, I would classify them as a type of immunotherapy. They are, you know, somehow modulating your immune system or using your immune system to either treat you in a sense of, in a good sense, like cancer, or in the sense of calming it down. And that field has been exploding the last 20 years. Especially when we think about, you know, I would say the key game-changing drugs is something called Keytruda for cancer, CAR T-cell therapy for cancer as well, like for the leukemias. But then for the autoimmune space, it's rituximab. It's the B-cell depleting agent, which has been a complete game-changer for those with like severe autoimmune diseases, like, you know, not to say that what we have isn't severe, but like lupus, for example, you know, or even MS, they'll be on like something like Ocrevus, for example. But in general, the B-cell depleters really are game changers for those that maybe were at higher risk of exhausting options, in the sense of like, you know, the prognosis isn't good. So the field is constantly evolving. We've not even got to like cell therapy and that potential yet for autoimmunity. So my background, actually what I did for my PhD, was looking at using your immune cells to basically stop an organ transplant from being rejected. But that same principle could be applied to autoimmunity. So we have these quick little, you know, jumping over to immunology, but we have these immune cells in our body called Tregs, or regulatory T cells. Their job is to suppress the immune system. Once you've cleared up an infection, they kick into gear and they're just like, okay, right, let's switch you off now. You've done your job. But in most cases of autoimmunity, pretty much every case of autoimmunity, they've also found that the Tregs, they're not quite doing their job properly, because Tregs are also meant to stop autoimmunity. They go around and control any potential autoreactive cell. They'll be like, no, we'll switch you off. Don't do that. Don't attack ourselves. You know, we're safe. Don't need to do that. So what if we could harness their power to be able to stop autoimmune diseases? I mean, that's the way that that's how they're supposed to function, right? Something has clearly gone wrong that they can't do that. Why? So that's even like, there's so much right now in clinical trials exploring the power of these cells, Tregs. And what if we could put that into patients? So what I would say to people is who are worried is that don't, because this field is, I can't even keep up with the literature coming out every single day in my field. That's why I try and be like, you know, the boff on all things immunology. I can't even keep up with it. I can't even keep up with my own field right now. So stay encouraged, because good science is coming out every single day.
Exactly. I think that's a good way to sum it up. Even if you are burning through some treatments, as long as, you know, your colon, let's say, is not destroyed enough that you have to go to surgery, you can be hopeful there are treatments still out there and there are treatments on the way, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we want to end on a high note, and we also want to bring it full circle back to Crohn's one more time. What are some misconceptions that you've come across in terms of Crohn's disease?
Oh, misconceptions. I think the big, first of all, people like get confused between like Crohn's and like IBS or IBD and IBS. Very different autoimmune element for IBD, not autoimmune for IBS. That's the big sort of misconception. What other misconceptions have I experienced? I guess what we spoke about earlier, which is that you caused it yourself. You brought this on you. You were too, exactly what you said, you were too anxious, or you decided to take a medical intervention for a worldwide global problem five years ago or something, and it's caused, without spelling it out, and that caused your disease. And as I say, you're not that powerful, hon. Like, you know, I mean, maybe you wish you were.
We wish, huh?
There's so much more. There's so much more nuance. Your immune system, your genetics, it's so much more complicated. And yeah, maybe you can scale it down to a simple sentence of, you were genetically susceptible. Something that you did in the environment triggered the spark. Yeah, but you're not a robot. You're not immune to emotions. You're not immune to going out every day and getting hit with whatever hits you, you know? So I think that's the biggest one I wanted to sort of address. And also, I think the last point, right? Hopefully those with Crohn's and IBD in general are good at this, which is you can't necessarily keep up with everyone else. And it's okay to admit that. And actually, it's probably the kindest thing to do to accept that. So listen to your body, sleep the extra hours if you can, if you don't have young kids, rest, and miss the workout if you know the workout is potentially going to knock you out for 2-3 days.
Very well put. I completely agree. I'm on the same page here. So looking into the future, and I'm really interested to see what you have to say about that, considering the field that you're in. You're in your 30s. I just kicked off my 40s. Will we see a cure for IBD in our lifetime?
You know, I don't know if you've been seeing the buzz, at least in the lupus space. And there was this really fascinating, and it was like two other autoimmune diseases as well, an amazing paper that came out in New England Journal of Medicine a couple of years back. But effectively, they quote unquote cured these patients. Now, we are very reluctant for now to use the word cured for many reasons. I think it's just, how do you define it for something that's not even been cured before? It's long-term remission, maybe. Definitely a lot of scientists would say that. But in terms of getting to long-term remission, we're seeing it for, as I say, for, there was a, the, so the trial I'm talking about, it was again, a CD19 CAR T trial. It's repurposing what is being used for blood cancers to autoimmune patients, because the premise in like leukemias is you have these rogue B cells that you just need to clear, at least with B cell leukemias or B cell specific cancers. If you just clear all the B cells, then you clear that patient's cancer, right? So that's kind of what's happening right now in the cancer space. But then similarly with autoimmune diseases, now maybe this wouldn't apply to IBD, but with like lupus, which is very B cell driven. I mean, when you think of antibodies against you, all these autoantibodies, that's driven by B cells predominantly. I mean, B cells make it. So if you clear all the B cells, then technically you should be able to also put a patient into remission. They've seen that now, which is really cool. And this is like long-term, as in for the last, when they followed up for a few years now. There's no reason why we can't see that as well for IBD. It maybe won't be a B cell depleter, or maybe some people are exploring B cell depleters. Could it be a T cell depleter? That's maybe riskier. But there are all these strategies that weren't around a few years ago, or strategies that we're seeing that have been working in different diseases, but we're now repurposing them for autoimmunity. So do I think we will see something that will put us in indefinite remission? Absolutely. In our lifetime, absolutely. Next 10 years, probably, I'm willing to say that. So be encouraged. That's what I'll say.
I love that positivity. And I think that is just the right spot to end it. So I first of all want to thank you so much for taking your time and speaking with me. I want to thank you for really hitting us with a lot of scientific knowledge. I find it really, really fascinating and inspiring. So keep fighting a good fight. You're also someone who's very active on social media, especially in representing your field and what's going on there, IBD as well. So I encourage anybody who's watching and listening to check that out as well and find you there. And from my end, I just, you know, wish you continuous luck with your Crohn's and also with your field of expertise, because it's really utterly fascinating to me. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
That's it for today's episode of Talking Shit, presented by Colitis Unfiltered. I'm Frank Tabring, and if this hit home or hit your gut, do us a favor, subscribe to the show, and follow us at Colitis Unfiltered on YouTube, Substack, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and Reddit. We'll see you soon for more inspiring stories from the bathroom floor.